Welcome to Season 9, Episode 2 of the Fireman Trainer Podcast, published on March 25th, 2025. In this episode, we'll be talking with Jamie Stark about her involvement in the firearm training industry. This episode is also brought to you by our friends at the FTA, the Firearm Trainers Association. Visit their website at ftaprotect.com to learn more about their instructor coverage offer and their competitive pricing. If you're a certified instructor, you qualify for FTA coverage, and listeners podcast can get 10% off on your policy by entering promo code FTP10 at checkout. This episode is brought to you by Mantis X. A couple of years ago, I came across Mantis X at a trade show and saw a lot of potential for myself and my students in it. Now, I can do my own dry fire practice at home and get expert feedback on what I need to do to improve my own trigger press. But besides improving my own shooting, it also allows me to help my students by having them use the device on their firearm to augment my coaching. It's like having an expert shooting coach right next to me with a student on the range. They work out so well that I actually had a friend who borrowed mine, then paid me for it because he wouldn't give it back. Get yourself a Mantis X and you'll see why it's such a valuable tool for improving your shooting and your students. We bring the podcast to support the industry of the Second Amendment, and most importantly, every firearm instructor in America that dedicates time and energy and making gun owners more knowledgeable. Today, we're joined by Jamie Stark from Your Stark Reality. Welcome to the show, Jamie, and thank you for taking time to share your experience with our audience.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Jamie, not many people probably know who Jamie Stark is, but can you go along and give us a little bit of your background, what you do in the firearm industry?
Sure. So my name is Jamie Stark. I'm a mom to three kids, and I run a defensive firearms training program in the state of Utah. I started out wanting to train women because I was pretty displeased with the training that I had experienced. I say that, but at the same time, listen, I gained a lot of firearms experience and a lot of knowledge. But the emotional aspect that came with it was either like I was encountering egos on the range that I don't know if they were intimidated that I was a woman and I was good at what I did, or if they just thought that it was their responsibility to teach me how to do it their way. And so it just, there was a lot that got in the way of just running the gun. And so I came home from a training and I just told my husband, you know, I want to start training women. And within 24 hours, he had a website and a logo. He was like, let's go. And we put a lot of time and effort into building, you know, the methodology of why we do what we do. And it's come a long way. And now we actually get a lot of men that want to come and train because they see that I'm a female, and that's a lot less intimidating for a guy who has no experience with firearms. And they think that there should be some expectation that they should know. And so they're intimidated. And so they'll reach out and they'll just say, hey, can I do this? And so over the last few years, I think our students have actually been probably more 50-50 male-female, so much so that I changed my logo because it was a female shooter. And I realized that I was limiting my audience with that, so I changed that. Why I got into firearms, I was working nights in San Diego at a hospital. And I came home one night and my dad realized that, like, I was the girl of the family. And even though I was raised with firearms, I didn't really have any concept of self-defense or situational awareness. So he took me out and basically, it was cute. He handed me a 22 because I was so scared. And I remember shooting it and I turned and I just looked at him and I was like, that was it? That was. And he was like, that's what I was trying to tell you, you know? And so I was like, oh. So then I got a 9mm and we went and did some courses, some real training. And when I got married and had kids, it brought a whole new level of responsibility that just made me realize that I had a lot more work to do.
That's really good. You know, I run across a lot of people, you know, that have, you know, those kind of experiences, unfortunately, you know, with different trainers that have too much ego. And, you know, that's where hearing it from you, describing it and then having that be your impetus behind getting into the training industry too, because it's not always easy, you know, for a female to break in to it. But at the same time, you've got that experience to where you go along and say, I think it'd be done better. And I point out this to our listeners and to the instructors that I train, is keep that in mind, because you don't want to pigeonhole your instructing style to be, you know, just one way. You want to be open to everybody, because you have a very large audience out there of new gun owners. We keep talking about millions of people that have bought guns since the pandemic. Every year there's more people buying them. And if you just try to go and focus to the bald headed, you know, old white guys, we'll stereotype them that way, you're missing a whole lot of the minorities. You're missing the females. You're missing the other parts of society that deserve to get the same quality training for it. Because again, the old white guys, they're probably not as much of a, they're not threatened as much by a crime or criminals as say young female, a handicapped person, you know, people along those lines. And that's where I try to make my training very welcoming. And I'm glad to hear that you're doing the same, because as firearm trainers, it's all almost feel it's my calling to make sure that I reach out to as many people as possible so they can live a healthy and productive life without worrying about being victimized.
Yeah, we part of our courses that I drive the point home at the beginning of our course is that the whole point in being here is to learn how to run your gun, right? And that sounds like such a simple concept, especially to people in the firearms industry. But to give you an example of like a training I encountered, one of my very, I think it was like my second class that I'd ever taken. I was shooting a Glock and I kept having type 2 and type 3 malfunctions. And the instructor came up, you know, and was like, it's because you're limp wristing. The gun is not the problem. You are the problem. And he walked up to the berm and he held my hand, my dominant hand on the firearm with his. And he just lobbed off like my whole magazine of rounds into the berm to demonstrate that the gun would cycle properly if I put enough tension on it. And I would like to state right now that I absolutely love this instructor. So it was not an issue. It was not an issue. You know, I don't have an issue with him. But what I realized was that's great. But if I couldn't operate the firearm under those conditions, then what good was that gun going to do me when I needed to rely on it? And so that is basically the premise of our training, is how, you know, we get women in here who have had shoulder replacement surgeries or, you know, and they can't hold it this way or that way. And so we have to adapt and we have to make it operational and functional for whatever we're dealing with. And so that's, you know, that's how we do what we do.
Yeah, that's probably one of the biggest challenges as an instructor, because if you are in the military, if you're in law enforcement, you know the candidates that you have there, the students, have got to meet a certain physical standard. When you deal with the general public, you're dealing with somebody from 18 to 90 years old. So some of them have great grip strength, some of them don't. Some of them can hold, you know, a lot of weight, you know, on their arms, and other ones make it very, they have a very much more difficult time. And you don't even have to say be 80 or 90 years old to have problems with your wrist. You could be a 40-year-old with carpal tunnel and have problems with it. One of the most challenging students I had was somebody who had enlarged digits because they had diabetes. They physically could not go along and pull the trigger. So we ended up going along devising, if they held the gun with their non-dominant hand and then used their dominant hand to put the finger in the trigger and then just pull the whole hand back, they could fire the gun. It was one of those adaptations that you're not going to see that in any book, any place, but that was one of the ways that they could do it safely. And at the same time, be able to shoot the gun confidently in case, you know, they're attacked, they have to defend themselves, because a simple fact of crime is that criminals will victimize the most vulnerable, i.e., you know, somebody who's handicapped like that, who, you know, walks a little bit slower than wheelchairs, all those types of things. They're not going to go along and try to take out the, you know, 20-year-old strapping, you know, Marine or anything else like that. Cause it's like, my chances of beating him are a lot less than if I go after this guy who's sitting there, you know, walking on a crutch or in a wheelchair, those types of things.
Yeah. Or the mom with three kids in tow who's got her purse slung over her shoulder. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All those types of things. And everybody owes, everybody deserves to have the knowledge and then make their own, you know, decisions on what they do for their, you know, personal safety. And those are all important things for instructors to keep in mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think as I progressed, you know, I learned my own adaptations and my own, you know, we always talk about how your firearm is a tool, right? You are the weapon, your gun is just a tool. And so, that, you know, we had to change tools too, to find something that would work and that was operational, and it was good. So.
Yeah. Glock's got 65% of the law enforcement market out there. They're quality firearms, but at the same time, I'll tell you that they're the reason why when you go into any gun shop, you see the Springfields and the M&Ps and the H&Ks, all those, guess what? Because there's a gun for every hand, every
person,
every different style and such. And even in some cases, every color that you would want to have on your firearm. And it just takes a little bit of time to find that one that works for you. And I always recommend people don't go out and buy a gun just for a class, come to class, learn about the guns, then go in and be knowledgeable and spend $100 on doing, pistol rentals. And they're like, well, I don't get anything at $100 for it. It's like, yeah, you don't get anything after $100, but I'll guarantee you one thing. You won't be losing $200 or $300 on buying a pistol that you don't like when you take it back to try to resell it. And then they see the logic in going along and getting the rentals, because you buy a gun for $600, the trade in value for that the next day is about 50% off, if that much.
And unfortunately, training women like that is a huge problem, because when they go into a gun shop, they are always sold, you know, the pink it and shrink it method. And unfortunately, like, that doesn't translate to accuracy on the range. And so we tell everyone, like, please, if you don't own something, don't go buy something. Because we want you to go in knowing what you want. And so we have a lot of firearms that we allow everyone to shoot and to try and to feel, from full size all the way. I mean, we have the Glock 17 all the way down to the P365, and it we're able to actually demonstrate, you know, what happens when you shrink that barrel, you know? So it's good. Yeah.
Fits easier in your pocket, but at the same time, you get quite a bit more kinetic energy coming back in it. And that's where you might be able to control a lot of stuff, but you can't control physics. Physics is going to be what physics is. And that's where, it's going to have much more muzzle rise than a Glock 17. And, you know, even a 380. You know, compared to a 9mm or a 45, each one's got its place for it. And you just got to kind of weigh things between it. Even, you know, I've suggested revolvers to people in the past too. And, you know, the reasons vary, but if it works for you and you can defend yourself with it, then that's a good choice versus not having something with you or having it back at home because it's too heavy or too bulky for you to be able to go along and confidently carry it with you.
Yes. And we talk to, like, you're not just going to own one. So get ready, because you're going to realize that you want this one at home and you want this one, you know, for your carry. And it's quite impressive to watch women understand, like, you know, I think we underestimate how much what their capacity is for not just shooting, but understanding all of the implications and the situational awareness and all of that. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's where there's a gun for them, just like there's different size shoes and different color shoes and everything else like that. I always tell people it sounds kind of silly, but when you actually get into guns, you realize that, you know, you can trick out a Glock and make it into a Gucci Glock. And the same way you can go along, get yourself a CZ or H&K and, you know, really, you know, have, you know, something that feels very good to you. And that makes it so much easier for you to be able to carry in those.
Yeah. Well, and that goes right into the forms of carrying for women, because that is so lacking in the industry. You know, my husband and I go to SHOT Show every year, and that's something every year that we discuss is just like, man, like, we just wish there were more options for women, you know? And part of that, I think, isn't the firearm industry that's lacking. I think it's also like society. Like, we women wear tight clothes, right? Like, we don't, how are we going to conceal underneath, you know, our skinny jeans or our leggings or, you know? And so obviously there are ways to do that. That's part of our training. We go through all of that. So I have corsets and leggings and all kinds of things that, you know, everybody gets to try, because that's one thing. There's so many opinions out there pertaining to like, well, what's right, and you shouldn't purse carry, and you shouldn't, you know, and it's just like, you know what, there isn't one right answer for everyone. You know, it's a matter of what that individual is dealing with and what they need to accomplish. So,
yep. Just like we were talking about guns, every different type of carry was developed for a specific reason for it. You know, when you're standing and you're at a convenience store counter for a long time, going along and have an ankle holster doesn't really work out. But if you're driving a whole lot, ankle holsters work for you. And that's where, you know, I try not to be absolute in anything I recommend to people, but I try to say, okay, keep in mind, if you do this, then you'll have to make sure you do that. If you do that, you know, it might make it a little easier this way, but it also makes it a little harder that way for it. I mean, you know, if I could walk around and knew when something's coming for me, I'd have my gun in my hand. I wouldn't worry about drawing it, because I'd be prepared for it. But we don't live in that kind of society, or we don't have AI quite to the point to where it can predict the future. But, you know, so I got to carry it in a holster on my body, and I've got to go along, use my best judgment, and trying to figure out, okay, when should I draw this without being, you know, overly paranoid about things and freaking people out.
Yeah. And the safety implications. I train a lot of moms. And so that's a hard, you know, it's really hard to carry on your person when you have a baby that you're carrying on your person, you know? And so we do train a lot of purse carry, because that solves that problem, you know? And there's a right way to do it, you know? But safety implications, so much. There's just so many variables to think about.
Yep. And that's where competent instructors can help you with all those variables and understanding them, so you make the right decision for yourself. You know?
Yes.
Well, Jamie, what kind of classes do you all teach? I know you've talked about some of the basic classes and things like that, but what are some of the other classes that you teach?
So we mainly focus on handgun and rifle. I don't teach a lot of shotgun. I've done quite a bit of shotgun training, but I have some scar tissue in my brain. And every time I train on the shotgun platform, I get really inflamed. And so we do train some shotgun, but I'm not usually the one that's instructing that. My husband usually does that. I do have a really cool methodology that I learned for that. That's more of like an off-body shotguns, like a push-pull method. And that has helped. So I think actually that's going to be part of this year's focus, is increasing how we engage with the shotgun on that platform. Because that's a hard platform for women. So it's not lost on me that politically, that's always the one they want to resort to for women, is like, just go buy a shotgun. It's just like, what? How is that going to solve the problem? So we offer mostly handgun classes. And rifle classes. So rifle is one of my favorite platforms. Everything is taught defensively. We don't do any like long range stuff. Everything is very much catered to how do you defend your home or your person, you know, depending on where you are. So we teach everything from clearing houses to engaging your kids. Where do your kids go in an encounter? How do you communicate that there is a situation that they need to respond to? So lots of like family format training.
Yeah, which is really important, because there again, in the last 15 years that I've been training concealed carry and things, I've kind of morphed, you know, my rationale into, it's not just trying to go along and stop the threat, but you're actually trying to go along and save yourself, so you're there for your family, your siblings, your loved ones, all that. Because if you go along and end up in the hospital, that's not a great outcome. If you go along and end up, you know, worse places, you know, the morgue, that's even a worse part for your family. And that's where I always tell people that if you can avoid the situation altogether, somebody might call you names over it, but names I think you can live with when it comes to being there for your family, being able to say, I'm waking up in my bed and things like that. So that's always good.
Yeah.
Always good.
That was part of what got me to start training my, not me personally training, but start a training business, was because I kept asking every time I'd go to these classes and it's like, okay, you know, threat and you're, and I'd engage, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, but I have children. Like, where are my children and how did I get to this point? You know? Mm-hmm. And that is a hard reality to process, that we very much teach that, like, your firearm is like your last resort. You know, mm-hmm. it is not confidence in your pocket, you know, which I think is different for men and women. Like, I think men have a more natural, like, fight mentality, you know, they're just natural defenders. Women are not so much that way. We're more wired to be protectors. And so our mentality is, how do we protect these things? And that's what will drive us to engage. But it is absolutely a last resort.
Yeah. So, well, I think it brings up a good point when you talking about, you know, family training and things like that, because, you know, if you've got children that are old enough to understand basic instructions, you need to start instructing them so that they know what to do and they're not going to go running around, that you tell them go to the bedroom or whatever your plan is that you have to, because just as much as you might be going along and training your finger, training your, you know, sight alignment, those types of things, you also have to make sure the loved ones that are around you have the proper training so that they don't become a liability. Mm-hmm. You know, from that standpoint, they, you know, jump on you, you know, because, you know, they always go to mommy or always go to daddy type of thing, and they hold them tight. Well, that doesn't really work out really well when you've got a gun in your hand and you're trying to protect them from the bad guys coming in the front door. And that's, you know, it's just another piece of the training that you've got to take in consideration.
Yeah, and it's not a one and done, mm-hmm. right? So that's something like that. That's actually probably what keeps our women coming back the most, is that they're bringing their kids in as their kids are getting older, having more comprehension, like are responding better. Then we adapt and we change the way that, you know, what are we doing here? And so it's important. It's important to change that. Part of our, when we teach clearing houses, we talk about, where are your kids when you're clearing your house? If something goes boom in the middle of the night, you know, and you grab your firearm and you start clearing your house, where are your children? Like, cause you know where they are in their beds. But for us, like when we moved into our home, we positioned our bed, the kids' beds, in specific locations in the room, knowing how we would be clearing the house so that we weren't putting them in a greater risk than what was necessary for us as we're clearing.
Mm-hmm.
So kids are it's a whole untapped market, you know, that I wish that there was so much more training on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Knowledge as far as in the self-defense standpoint, the one thing I talk to a lot of people about, and just kids being firearm aware. You know, when one in three households in the United States has a gun in it, even if you don't have a gun in your house, there's a very good likelihood that the house that you go over to, neighbors, friends, different things like that, has a gun in it at some point, and you don't want kids to find out the wrong way about, you know, firearm safety. So yes. That's good. Well, Jamie, what do you do as far as competition? Because you're a very accomplished competitor also.
I am not an accomplished competitor. I've dabbled in it, but it's not my favorite. I like to shoot steel. So I've done more of a handful of steel shootouts and stuff like that. Not too much IDPA. I personally found that it generated more bad habits for me than it did than it was effective at increasing the things that I wanted it to increase. So it's great for speed. It's great for speed. It's great for, you know, target practice, stuff like that. But what I kind of found was, for me, like it sort of diminishes like the mental responsibility that's necessary for true defensive encounters. And so I didn't like that it sort of removed the responsibility in that aspect. You know, it was very mm-hmm. easy. It's very easy to just whip your gun out and shoot through this stage really quickly, you know, and clear and see what your, you know, what your speed is and what your score is. And like, that's really fun and enjoyable. And I like that. But for me, like I have an appreciation for the burden of the responsibility of carrying my firearm. And so I don't want to diminish that, if that makes sense.
Yep, that makes sense. It's one of those things where I've been in training classes and different things. And one of the things I preach to a lot of my students is being able to go along and be able to articulate why you shot, you know, a mm-hmm. specific way. Because if it's not me asking you in training class, it's going to be a law enforcement officer who's asking you at the scene of, you know, shooting or something else like that. And you've got to really be able to take and process exactly what you saw and be able to relay that to make sure that you are, you know, you're not digging yourself a legal hole, from that standpoint. And, you know, all the firearm instructors that do concealed carry know what I'm talking about, that yes, it's a, you can do everything right, but if you don't go along and actually be able to explain why you did it, it's basically the same, just as bad as if you do the wrong thing, because your lawyer is going to have to restate it, or hopefully, you know, get certain pieces of evidence, you know, not allowed in court, versus you just not being charged altogether. Different outcomes depending upon what you say and who you say it to. And always use a lawyer to say what you want to say to the police, because they can help you make sure your words aren't coming out in nonsense where they can be used against you.
Yeah. Yeah. And my kids came and watched me, you know, shoot a couple stages, and like, that was fun, but I recognized what that looked like to them also, you know, and as a mom, like, that's hard for me to justify for them in terms of their long-term training and just where they're at emotionally, because here I'm teaching them that firearms, you know, this isn't a toy, this is not a game, this is not, you know, but then that's how I'm using it and engaging with it in those scenarios. And so I just kind of stepped back and decided that for right now in the season that we're in right now, that was not, not where I needed to put my focus. And so again, I do like a good steel shootout. yeah. So
good. All right, Jamie, I got one more question for you. What are your suggestions to the other instructors that are listening right now when it comes to training, and specifically about training women?
My advice would be, you know, to recognize that like they are capable and they are competent. Okay. They just don't have the education pertaining to firearms specifically in order to apply that to the skills that they need to become proficient. So in other words, generally, men who have engaged with firearms have an understanding of how the firearm functions, the basic function of a firearm. Semi-automatic, striker fire, right? Women don't have that. And so we get questions, like we have very conversational classes, and it's really, I recommend that. We get great responses, but the questions that we get asked just pertaining to the function of a firearm are fascinating, because you recognize how much everyone is influenced by the firearm culture, the anti-firearm culture. And so they have no concept of, you know, well, the bullet is the only portion of the round that travels out of the barrel, right? They think that whole casing is flying out of the gun, you know? And so they really have no understanding of, you know, what they're dealing with. And so when you give them a foundation of knowledge, then they can respond appropriately. And that's how we train everything from malfunctions, clearing malfunctions, to loading and unloading. Is you can't just give them the motions of what's happening, because if they don't understand why they're doing what they're doing, then it's kind of pointless, you know? And just be patient. So they progress. It's pretty surprising how quickly women will progress through their training and be motivated to continue training further when you're patient with them, you know, and just allow them to gain the knowledge that's necessary in order to perform the skills.
Mm-hmm. Very, very good advice there. Well, Jamie, all our season 9 guests, we've been asking one special question to. What is your training focus this year?
My personal training focus this year is that my husband and I are going to take some long-range precision rifle classes. And that's not something that I've dabbled with. Everything we do is very defensive, you know, close range, close contact. And so I'm looking forward to that. I like to engage my targets as far away as possible, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's a good mantra to have. You know, the further away the better.
Yeah, right. So we're gonna do some of that this summer, and I look forward to it.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Here in Ohio, we're limited. The most ranges around me are 100, some are 300, and if I travel 3 hours or so away, I can get to 1,000-yard range. But it's in Utah, I think it would be a lot easier to find a long range type of shooting, which has its own challenges, which I always find very interesting.
Yeah, I think it will be enjoyable. Like, there's so many aspects that come into that you don't have to account for with handguns, you know. So
mm-hmm. Yep, that is for sure. But it's also very cool when you can reach out to those long distances and actually see that you hit a target. It's like, wow, do you realize how far that is?
Yeah. You
know, it's gonna take us 10 minutes to drive there just to see the target. Yeah, you know, those kind of to
see where we hit it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, that'll be fun.
Yep, that'll be fun. Well, Jamie, where can people find information about your Stark Reality and the classes that you're teaching?
Sure. Our website is yourstarkreality.com. That's the best place. We are on Facebook also. But the website has most of the information as well as all of our contact information.
Okay. And I'll have that in the show notes for everybody who wants to. And again, Jamie, I really appreciate you taking the time today to share your experience with our instructors and pass on the word, because as I said, beginning with, it's always interesting to hear people's experience when it comes to training. It's great. You've got a reason why you're training, and it's good for the instructors to go along and hear that kind of feedback so that maybe we can adjust our training a little bit to be a little more open, a little bit more inclusive about, you know, who we're training, because everybody deserves to be safe and to be able to, you know, protect themselves and their loved ones against the evils of the world.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Well, have a good evening, and thanks again.
Thanks, Rob. I really appreciate it.
That's a wrap for this episode. Hope you found the conversation with Jamie beneficial and inspirational about why she got into the industry and what she's doing. If you found this interesting, think about sharing it with your friends. Think about going along, giving us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app. Help us grow. Spread it around to other people so we can make the industry better. If you're searching for additional topics, check out our website, farmtrainerpodcast.com. If you have suggestions for me, comments on the episode, feel free to email me at ftp@concealedcarry.com. Remember to visit our sponsors, the Farm Trainers Association at ftaprotect.com, and to learn more about their instructor coach offer. Listeners, remember, use code FTP10 at checkout for 10% off on your policy. We bring this podcast, support the industry, the Second Amendment, and most importantly, every firearm instructor in America that dedicates time and energy into making gun owners more knowledgeable. Stay safe out there, everyone.
Concealed Carry Inc. and ConcealedCarry.com strives to share helpful information and education about gun-related topics, training tips, and other things that may potentially have legal implications for its listeners. The information contained in this podcast is intended in good faith, but it is important to understand that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand laws that apply to them. Nothing in this podcast should be misconstrued as legal advice or counsel.